Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Mostly Mets podcast, where we talk mostly about the Mets. I'm Toby Hyde with Robert Brender. Rob, how are you doing today?
Outstanding. I saw the Nationals and Indians last night. Two teams in first place in their respective division. Two teams that are kind of rolling along a little bit and both look like they'll be in the playoffs. And it's refreshing, Toby.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean,
yeah, go really to watch good baseball.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a great game. And Scherzer pitched well and Bauer pitched well. And so, yeah, you know, winning baseball, good teams, that was a lot of fun.
We have two orders of business today. We have to talk about Terry Collins and his recent managerial behavior, and we owe our listeners a long overdue mailbag. So first Terry Collins, second mailbag. Before we get there, quick programming note, to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts covering the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network, and please make sure to rate and review our channel. All right, you're ready for a little Terry Collins prosecutorial fun?
Yeah, I feel like, Toby, on Twitter especially, 99% of the feedback that I'm being given these days is all about, and when I'm talking Mets, of course, is all about Terry Collins. No matter what the Mets do wrong on the field, it's all Terry Collins' fault, and I'm not going to sit here and suggest that he's the best manager in the world. He's definitely not. But I think maybe going through this, we could discover that he's not really at fault for everything.
Well, that's surely true. There are probably problems in the world, certain, you know, refugees and poverty that Terry Collins is not responsible
for. Right.
We're gonna leave this solely for the Mets.
Right, yes.
Also, I'd remind you, and it's easy to forget, that something like, 8% of American adults are on Twitter? So it self-selects for the obsessive.
That's exactly right. Yes, absolutely. And there's also, you know, the general fan that's watching every single game that panics or you know, goes over the top every inning when something happens poorly or bad or great. They overreact, I think, a little bit.
All right, let's talk about certain charges for Terry Collins. The first is bullpen misuse. He had Familia throwing the day after the blown save. He had, Blevins in the eighth inning instead of Reed against the Yankees. And Rob, the one that gets me is the Saturday night against the Tigers, where he had guys on base and one lefty who's not a great hitter with a bunch of righties behind. And he brought in Nice, and he ended up with Nice against Miguel Cabrera with the bases loaded. Now, it's all well and good to think Nice can get a lefty, and that's Nice's job, and he should have done it. But that seems like it's severe mismanaging in the sense that he was only prepared for when things went perfectly, and he was not prepared for sort of the next level of what happens if this thing doesn't work out perfectly. And of course, Cabrera gets a hit, Tigers get a big lead, and the Mets comeback comes up short.
Right.
So how do you answer to these charges of bullpen mismanagement for Collins?
I feel like that's the topic about Terry Collins that we have discussed the most over the years, isn't it? That he just can't figure out how to manage a bullpen. It's hard for me to defend it. He makes decisions and moves with that bullpen that sometimes boggle my mind. I know the one you're talking about in Detroit. That's one example.
This is just one week.
Right, exactly. And I don't think you could pick on him about last night's game, which would have been, Wednesday. So that would have been Tuesday night against the Diamondbacks, where he kept Hansel Robles in because Michael Bourne, who wound up tripling and giving the Diamondbacks the lead, was a much better hitter against left-handed pitching, as it turns out. So I think he made the right call there. But, yeah, in general, I don't think Terry manages a bullpen well. He overuses guys. We saw him, at least I think, somewhat responsible for blowing out Scott Rice a couple of years ago.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, just using him to death. He does that. We saw the use of Jim Henderson earlier this year, which I'm telling you, Toby, it almost infuriated me the way that he was using Jim Henderson.
Yeah, I remember talking about that, and you were right about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're talking about a guy that's coming in off of missing a year plus with arm injuries, and then you're just throwing him out there like that over and over and over again, and multiple innings when it's clear that his velocity has dropped. Can't defend him. I think it's been horrendous usage of the bullpen.
All right, a little more from that game Saturday under the title of Motown Madness for the next charge. Not running Nimmo for Bruce is the tying run. And then Bruce thrown out at the plate by not very much. And he didn't challenge in what was basically a situation with no cost to the challenge and a pretty significant upside That seems, and apparently Sandy Alderson was understandably upset about that.
Oh yes.
Any defenses of those two situations?
You mentioned Sandy Alderson, Toby. After the game, he was asked, should Terry have challenged in that situation? And I think he said no comment. So to me, that says it all. That, look, he had to challenge there. I mean, is there any reason to not challenge? As you said, there's no cost. And right. We've seen challenges in the past that you wouldn't think in the world. There's no way they could overturn it. And they do for God knows what reason. But I have to ask you this.
Especially plays at the plate because you've got the weird blocking rules. I mean, I'm not saying any of that was in play there. You just have to challenge that play to keep the game going. Right, there's no two ways about it.
No offense to Jim Kelly, who does a great job, I'm sure, as the replay analyst for the Mets, the guy who sits in the clubhouse and makes the decision. But you're not going to go with what he thinks in that case. You have nothing to lose, as you said. Just go out there, challenge. I have to ask you this. What's more egregious? Terry not pinch running Nimmo for Bruce as the tying run at second base, or Terry saying after the game that he didn't know that Jay Bruce was slower than Brandon Nimmo?
I'm so glad you asked me that, because that question gets to my actual main problem with Terry Collins. I mean, bullpen management is frankly something that a lot of major league managers do badly.
Right.
The line that Terry Collins used was, for all we know, Bruce was as fast as Nimmo. That is insane.
Right.
That is a man not doing his job. There is actually lots of reasons to believe that Jay Bruce is not faster than Nimmo. Okay? How many years has Terry Collins been the Mets manager?
Oh, gosh. What is it, five now?
Right. Okay. How many games have the Mets played against the Reds? I should have had this in front of me. But it's, you know, they play eight times a year. He's seen Bruce almost 50 games in that time.
Right. Right.
He's seen Brandon Nimmo. He was the Mets farm director when Nimmo was in the system.
Right.
He's seen Nimmo in multiple spring trainings. He's seen a lot of Brandon Nimmo, just not necessarily in the big leagues.
Right.
So, first of all, he's seen a lot of both of these guys. It's his job to know basic things about players. That's the first level. The second level is, it's his job to know basic things about guys on his roster. So, to the degree that he has forgotten basic attributes about Nimmo and Bruce, which is fine, although a little concerning that he wouldn't know basic things about them, he's got a frigging army of people.
Right.
Scouts and support staff who can tell him these things.
Yeah, and
so
pleading
ignorance there and pleading, you know, for all we knew is absolutely malpractice.
It is. And I tend to think, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt so badly that
I don't know how in this situation.
Here's the only way. I think that maybe, just maybe, he got defensive because things didn't work out for him and he just said the wrong thing. That it wasn't necessarily the way that he actually thought. He knows that Nimmo's faster, but he just was trying to defend himself and the decision so badly that maybe that's just what came out.
And that's not totally crazy. Tuesday night, for example, the Mariners pinch ran for Cano relatively early, and they didn't have their best hitter in a game that spiraled into the nether hours of the night, right?
Right.
So sometimes managers perhaps are a little over-aggressive there. Down a run on the road, I don't think that's a situation where you're really worried about pulling Bruce. Okay. Shall we move on?
Yes.
All right. Third. So this is a title that we have splitting hairs. So, you know, sort of Terry Collins' use of data, whether he believes in reverse platoon splits, applying the data correctly, way over using the platoon advantage. You feel like this is a viable charge?
You know, I think you could pick on every single manager for the decisions they make, especially little ones, game in and game out. And again, this goes back to the everyday fan who's watching each and every inning of every single game. It's easy to pick on decisions that don't work, where if your team is hitting and they're putting up runs, a lot of those decisions get masked. But
yep.
There are occasions, Toby, like, again, I hate to go back to just one game, but I want to go back to last night.
Tuesday.
Right.
Careful. I was flying, so I was in and out of this one.
Okay, and I was working that other game, so I was doing the same. But I do know that in the ninth inning, the Mets had the tying run, I believe, at the plate. And
yep.
Travis d'Arnaud is coming up. And because he wanted to get the left-handed hitting bat in the lineup, against the Diamondbacks closer. He pinch hits Ty Kelly.
A right-hander, by the way. Barrett.
Oh, is Ty Kelly? I thought he batted left.
No, 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 no. The closer is right-handed. So he's playing platoon advantage. I'm glad you brought this up because this one also I was in O'Hare for this and I nearly spit out my Goose Island while this happened.
Right. Okay, so I'm not the only one. So you're bringing in Ty Kelly, and no offense to Ty Kelly, who I know he put up some great numbers in AAA this year, and that's great for him.
It's Vegas. Everybody hits in Vegas.
Yeah, he's barely a big leaguer. Let's be honest here. I think he'd be the first to admit that. And Travis d'Arnaud, for all the shortcomings and all the injuries and all the issues and the lack of power that he's shown, he actually does have some. And he can tie the game with one swing.
Yep.
I just don't – and he's a big leaguer. Like it or not, he is a big leaguer. I don't understand how you pinch hit for him there.
No, this was bonkers too. And again, the Mets were down two with a runner at first base to begin the sequence. Conforto later stole second on took the second on defensive indifference. But no, this is insane, right? So this is a Mets offense that we know basically scores all their runs on home runs. I exaggerate. So either you're looking for a home run to tie or even like a short sequence thing, a double up the gap and then another hit to tie. Right?
Right. Yes, correct.
And d'Arnaud can do that better than Kelly.
Much. I mean, Ty Kelly has almost no chance.
So a couple other fallouts from this. I don't know if you were watching in real time, but they showed d'Arnaud's face in the dugout, as SNY did.
Oh, no, I didn't see this.
As this is happening, and he's just sort of sitting there chewing his gum with this very perplexed look on his face.
The Michael Phelps look, or are we talking?
No. He's not furious at the guy in front of him, but he's trying to sort some stuff out in his head at the moment. I think it's revealing. You know, d'Arnaud's not a terribly expressive guy, but I think he was chewing on some stuff. He was certainly chewing on gum, but he was also chewing on some more substantive matters there.
Yeah, it's look.
The second thing after the game is he said, "Look, Terry made the right call. I just have to hit better." That's noble stuff, Travis. I'm glad you didn't throw your manager under the bus because then we'd be talking about that. You know, I think, you know, it's nice sometimes to be honest. It's nice to play good teammate. I appreciate Travis playing good teammate there. But you knew it hurt.
Yeah.
You really knew it hurt. And if Terry Collins is going to beat, you know what you know what that move said to me, Rob? That move said to me Terry Collins knows it's playoffs or bust for him and this team in 2016.
Yeah, but because it's still the wrong decision.
Of course, totally right. But if he's thinking long term, right? Who are his best long term position players beyond the end of the 2016 season? There are two of them, maybe.
Okay.
Or two guys that you think are important: Conforto and d'Arnaud.
Right. And he doesn't use them.
he's all about building those two guys up. So what this says to me is it's all short term, super short term now for Terry. The final accusation is the loopy lineups. Not playing Conforto every day, weird use of Flores, Rene Rivera as a DH. The list goes on and on. We'll stop there. Actually, you know, I'll add
there's so many.
I'll add actually not playing Alejandro De Azza. I can't believe this is a legit charge in July when he was hitting the ball well.
Yeah.
Not playing Flores and he was hitting the ball well. So how would you answer to this charge?
I actually am a big fan of lineup construction. I know a lot of people don't think it means much or anything. I do think it means something, the way you put a lineup together. I've never been a tremendous fan of playing guys that shouldn't be in lineups really more than once a month and using them as designated hitters in some cases. Like you mentioned Rene Rivera. I know Rene has to catch it probably once a week. That to me was unbelievably awful. And I know that the Tigers that day were starting a left-hander on the mound. Forgive me, I don't remember who the left-hander is, but they were starting a left-handed pitcher on the mound. That pitcher is not Sandy Koufax. That pitcher is not a dominating, it's not even David Price. The idea that Michael Conforto can't get four at-bats against a left-handed, mediocre left-handed pitcher, and it's going to give you a better chance than Rene Rivera, is boggling to me. I don't understand.
I don't know. I can't kill Terry Collins for not playing Conforto against a lefty. The Mets, as Terry Collins has reminded you, are trying to win games, and Conforto's hitting like 200 or .89 or something against lefties.
Yeah, but Rene Rivera. Right. It's not that like you have a better option.
That looks bad. Mets are very left-handed, right? Yeah. That's part of the problem with the Jay Bruce trade. I mean, how many left-handed hitting corner outfielders can run team carry?
And that goes to a bigger point here, Toby.
At that moment, the Mets had four corner hitting left-handed hitting a corner left-handed hitting outfielders.
Yeah, and again, it goes to a greater point, which is two things. Number one, the injuries have obviously killed them, and you're without Cespedes right now, and he's such a huge piece of this offense, and he makes everything go. So putting together a solid offensive lineup is hard to do when you don't have your best piece in the middle anyway. But the lineup construction is also in part due to the roster, and the roster isn't put together by Terry Collins.
Correct.
The Mets made the decision to go get Jay Bruce. I'm a fan of that move. Keep in mind, I am a fan of it, but at the same time, I'm only a fan of it because they just didn't have anything else that was better. You know, I just was hoping for more offense, period.
Yeah, I think you said some important things that I want to poke at, which is, doesn't it feel like the Mets have been playing shorthanded for months?
Yes, they have.
And it's not, and look, every team deals with injuries. It's just the Mets seem particularly bad at managing them. We'll circle back to that in 2 seconds. And I want to point out the lineup construction, and I think you're absolutely right, the lineup construction is a weird function of the roster construction, which is very, very odd. But now I want to go back to the injuries. And it's not Terry Collins' fault. I made the joke some time ago that he's not taking a baseball bat to Lucas Duda's bat or any Darno's shoulder or any of these things. He's not sitting there with a pin in his voodoo doll.
Right.
But when guys do get hurt, it seems like things linger. The Cespedes thing came this is a Terry Collins issue. This is a fifth charge, is that he's really poor at managing injuries, communicating with the press about injuries, and it seems like communicating with the players about injuries. And this might even be anything more serious than any of the previous four issues we've talked about.
Right. Well, poor communication is really not supposed to be – he's supposed to be a good communicator is what I'm trying to get at. And that's a shame.
But doesn't it seem when it comes to injuries it breaks down all the time?
It does, and the Mets' poor usage of the DL or lack thereof, I think they make all sorts of mistakes with that, yeah.
All right, so folks have questions, some Terry Collins, some other. Okay, so our friend John Michael Pellerulio wants to talk about the offseason because he's already bored with this season. He asks, in the offseason, should all of the Mets' moves revolve around speed and average instead of home run or bust? The current strategy doesn't seem to be the best choice, considering they play in one of the biggest parks in MLB. Robert?
Okay. First of all, I don't think the park is really a factor at this point. I think Citi Field, with all the fence moves,
absolutely right,
plays fair. So let's eliminate that portion of the question. The Mets' moves in the offseason, look, there are so many pieces of this roster that are likely coming back to begin with. Look, you have a free agent in Cespedes if he opts out. Mm-hmm. You'll have a free agent in Walker, so you'll have to figure out what you're going to do in second base.
The Mets would extend a qualifying offer to at this point.
Right, and he's mentioned, I think as of yesterday even, that he's interested in coming back. So there's a possibility you bring him back. So what position?
He's been good, by the way. I mean, inconsistent, but good.
Right, he has. And he has 20 runs, I think. No, he's definitely not putting up Murphy's numbers. So you know two things. You're going to have to fill third base, likely. You don't know what's going to happen with David Wright, but I would imagine that the chances David comes back and he gives you, full-time third base duties is a long shot at best. So you're probably going to have to fill third base, and you may have to fill first base unless you decide you're going to bring Duda back. And I don't know what's going on with Duda and his back.
He's done for the year. I mean, it's not good.
Right, but in terms of even getting back down the road, I have no clue. They haven't really mentioned how severe this injury is, other than it just doesn't seem good. They've clearly said that they want to move on from Darno, a catcher. So you're talking about three positions that they might have to fill this offseason, and none of them really can be filled by speed-type guys, per se, right? You don't think of speed when you think of third base, first base, and catcher very much. I don't know how you change the outfield. I mean, you kind of know what the outfield's going to be, even if Cespedes was to leave. So I don't know how you fill those spots with those type of guys. So really, you're talking about on base.
And that's what's missing from this roster is the on base element. There are lots of guys who strike out a lot, and the Mets are near the top of the league in percentage of runs scored by a home run. They're near the bottom in batting average, which I'm not that excited about, but it drives a lot of the on base percentage stuff. And the Mets, and on-base percentage is about twice as important as slugging to score and run. So that's really what we're after here, is the Mets just need to get on base more.
And this is a very poor year for free agency. So if they're going to make additions, 99% of it's probably going to have to come via trade. And this team doesn't make a whole lot of those. So,
well, again, remember when the Mets were crazy hot last August? It wasn't just Cespedes. It was Darno hitting the ball well. It was Conforto hitting the ball out of his mind.
Right.
Those guys have underperformed this year.
Yeah, they've been terrible.
Matthew Marielli suggests, I feel there's a lack of leadership in the clubhouse. Who is stepping up to fill the void of David Wright? Is anyone?
No.
That's me asking, right?
No. Not that I can think of. I mean, look, offensively, they have veterans on this team, plenty of them, but how much roster change has there been on the, you know, Jay Bruce could probably be a leader. He's been in the big leagues a long time. Neil Walker, same thing. Cabrera, same thing. But those guys are new to the team. There's nobody that can fill David Wright's spot as far as leadership. At least,
yeah, it's true, but Cabrera doesn't have the gravitas, and Jay Bruce has been there a week.
Right.
Curtis Granderson, I think, is a leader in a way, although I don't get the sense that he's sort of, you know, he put, I don't get the sense that he's as interested as in David Wright as being face of a franchise. His good works are sort of legendary in Detroit and Chicago and elsewhere.
And he's
given a ton of money to
point.
Really important causes. Right.
So I don't know that they have that guy right now. And maybe that's a big piece of this too. We talk about the injuries, we talk about all the other things, but losing David Wright maybe means more to just the clubhouse than anything else.
Yeah, usually I'm so dismissive of this stuff, but this seems like a more valid concern in this situation.
Yeah, they could use him, that's for sure.
It's not Duda, it's not Darno, because like the guys you would turn to just aren't hitting.
Right.
And pitchers are off in their own world because they're pitchers.
It's hard to lead when you're underperforming, that's for sure.
That's a great way to put it. Andrew Wortman asks, do you see Familia getting more control over his pitchers, or do you think he remains an inaccurate closer who gets the job done? I'll take this one. He is what he is at this point. He just saved whatever it was 50 games in a row. Let's move on. Guys are going to allow runs once every 3 months. You know, the World Series stuff wasn't his fault. He actually pitched well. He got it beat by some really soft contact and some really weird Terry Collinsing and some bad Mets defense. Familia is just fine, and he is what he is, and he's really damn good at it.
That's exactly right.
Okay, good. Matt Doherty, why doesn't Curtis Granderson get benched?
Well, he's making how much this year? I don't know the exact amount. It's like 15
million. It's a couple pennies.
Yeah, a couple pennies. Makes a lot of money. He put up great numbers last year, or at least very good numbers. You're hoping that he could give you that again. And if you bench him, are you benching him for Conforto, who hasn't done a whole lot, and saying that, hey, we're basically playing for the future as compared to playing for the present, or just kind of hoping that Conforto could put up huge numbers and turn things around immediately? I would bench Curtis Granderson if you had a better idea of who's going to start. Who else is going to play center field right now?
Brandon Nimmo.
He's in AAA, so who else?
Yeah, I'm aware.
So, I mean, look, yeah, without Lagares on the roster, I don't know who else plays.
Right, and Lagares in some ways makes benching Granderson easier because you could play Lagares against the lefties and sort of turn it gradually into a timeshare. Benching Granderson for one of the young lefties makes it really apparent, and maybe you then have clubhouse problems. I don't think Granderson's the kind of guy to pout, but
right.
Maybe then you do have issues.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And when they brought Bruce in initially, that was a thought, but things have worked out because of those injuries in terms of getting Curtis playing time.
Jeremy Paoli asks, in the offseason, should the Mets re-sign Neil Walker?
Should they? Well, what are the other options at second base? I thought before they made the Bruce trade that Dilson Herrero is going to be that guy for sure, and they would just let Walker go with the qualifying offer, as you said. He'd get a long-term deal somewhere and pass on it. But now that Dilson's gone, I think you almost have to try to re-sign Neil Walker. And if you're not going to get him, I haven't looked at what the second base free agent market is, but as we were saying earlier, I don't think it's supposed to be very good in terms of free agency, period. So, unless you can make a trade. I mean, people have brought up, does Justin Turner fit in L.A. long-term? I think he's a free agent after the year. He's been playing a lot of third base with L.A., but he's capable of playing second. Would he even want to come back to New York after the debacle that saw him leave? Maybe that's a fit.
Yeah, it was the leaving that was so messy with Turner. The talking junk about him on his way out the door.
Boy, did the Mets screw that up. I mean, they've screwed up a lot of things. I give Sandy Alderson all the credit in the world for some of the moves that he's made. some of the trades. I think he's done as a whole, he's done an excellent job. But what he did with Justin Turner in terms of letting him go and what he's become, oh, man, that was a huge mistake.
And at the time, it was over nothing. It was over $1 million to be their helper on the bench.
Because they thought he was a clubhouse nuisance.
Translation, he partied too much.
Right.
All right, Steven Sippen asks, why weren't the Mets ready to deal Wheeler to get Lucroy?
Go for it.
Look, when it comes to trade negotiations, it's really difficult, unless you're sitting in Sandy Alderson's office, to know exactly what he was and wasn't willing to do. The other thing about Wheeler is he's a guy rehabbing from Tommy John surgery. The fact that the Reds were into him last year doesn't mean that Wheeler is enough to headline a Lucroy package now. There's a lot sort of embedded in this question that I'm not sure I buy on an assumption level.
Well, I think the biggest question is, it was Wheeler and what to get Lucroy. Yeah. We don't know what the what part is. I saw the posting on Mets blog earlier this week. I think it was Matt that had found out that that the Brewers were demanding that Wheeler be involved, otherwise they weren't going to pull the trigger on any deal with the Mets. And if that's the case, which I'm sure it is, again, what were the other parts of that package? If it was Wheeler and, let's say, Nimmo and something else, would I have done that? Yeah, in a second. If it was Wheeler and, you know, Ahmed Rosario, you're not going to do that deal. So it's important to know what the entire trade proposal was. But, Toby, I'll say this. If it's just Zach Wheeler and, you know, something, you know, as anything other than Ahmed Rosario, really, and if it's one other piece, I'm making that deal in a second. I would trade Zach Wheeler.
Yeah, I think that the key is what you hit on is the what else, right? Wheeler plus Nimmo probably is a little painful for Met fans. They've got a lot invested in these guys in the front office. You sure I can get it done because Lucroy is a good hitter and a catcher, and he solves a lot of your problems. Wheeler plus Rosario, they probably felt like was a price too steep.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that.
And so the issue is not just Wheeler, but sort of the total of what's in there.
Correct.
Because Wheeler, like, for all of his joy is basically a little bit above league average. You know, we know he can be good, but he hasn't proven it over a long time. He's been hurt a lot. Or not a lot. He's just missed a year because Tommy John. But some guys don't come back all the way from it. All right. Luis Pulis asks, why is everything always a struggle?
Well, that's life, Luis. For all of us. Why is everything always a struggle? I don't know. Every team goes through struggles.
Are People we talking about struggles. The Mets still?
Not even sure I understand that question at all. Yeah, I guess he is. Why is everything always a struggle for the Mets? Well, it wouldn't be
He didn't
fun.
Say with the Mets. He just said with the Mets. Right? Life is pain. Who's the philosopher who said life is pain?
Right, I don't know, but I hear you. Look, if he is talking about the Mets, why is it'll make it more fun when they win and when it's successful because of these struggles. Do you want it to be easy? You want them to have the highest payroll every single year, win like the Yankees did for that 10 or 15-year stretch? I don't know. I guess that could be fun too, but, you know.
It wasn't easy then. I don't know if you saw this. When it comes to elite athletic performance, did you see Katie Ledecky, who's sort of America's sweetheart right now, or at least one of them?
Yes, of course.
In the pool, she said after, I think it was the 200 meter, which is a tricky race. It's like basically 2 minutes of flat out sprint, right? So, you know, the 100 meter sprint that we think about on the running race, that's a 10 second race. You know, this is almost 2 minutes of full out exertion. And she said basically when she was done with it, she was ready to throw up.
Yeah.
Like she had pushed herself to the absolute max.
Middle of the race, even.
Yeah, I know you saw that comment, but
yeah.
I thought that was really a nice reminder about, you know, elite world-class athletes make it look sometimes easy and sometimes graceful, but they're operating at this extreme level of physical output. So I liked that line, and I thought it was sort of nice to hear, like, oh my God, that really hurt. You know, when it comes to the rest of you, or the rest of outside of baseball, sorry, it's hard. We all have to pay our bills, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Even when it's fun, it's a struggle.
I hope we all find love on the way. All right, so some of us love our baseball. Rob, any other deep thoughts for the week?
No, that's it. I'm sorry to Terry for going through 20 minutes of putting him down.
He's a good man. He's a good man, but he's had a bad, bad couple weeks.
He has. Score some more runs. Make it look like he's the greatest.
Good luck with that. This has been the Mostly Mets podcast. For Rob Render, for everybody in the studio, I'm Toby Hyde. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been the Mostly Mets podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.